SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three at the races, and the morning has flown by as we kind of figured it would when we've got live guests, and we've got a big weekend, and we got the contest, and of course, we also have the luxury of another, call it 16 to 18 hours of coverage starting at 2 o'clock today and each day going forward. 2 to 7:30, sometimes 8, depending on the way the day unfolds. And, of course, we have to typically wait a little bit at the end of the play each day for things to go final. And Ed DeRosa on hand and ping-ponging with James Scully around the country at different events and different big weekends. Eddie, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's great to be able to support racing, as you know, but being at these events and meeting the people who make the game go, whether it's the players or the horsemen, is essential to us doing better jobs, and always a pleasure to be a part of this event.
Well, and it's a little bit of everything for, you know, for the TwinSpires / Brisnet team, because you're happy to provide materials and information for the players and for TwinSpires users, and you know, give them every opportunity and advantage. And of course, that's actually a topic that we brush on it a little bit every year. Jerry Brown and the Thoroughgraph team, Jerry estimating about 60 players on hand from Thoroughgraph, the Stats Racelens here, and Ellis Starr. I'm sure Ellis will sit in at some point over the weekend. You know, everybody that is counted on for the, you know, the materials and the tools that they use. Everybody tries to, you know, not just to be in position to you know, to claim partial responsibility for a player's success. You take pride in it, but you want everybody to do as well as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know how much you know, we put into our plays and handicapping and betting, and these tournament players very similar in that regard, and then have, you know, sort of the extra step, especially those very active on the tour. I mean, it's a year-long commitment to compete for an NHC seat and be a part of this. And when they get here, you definitely want them to have the information that they're accustomed to having when they handicap day to day. So, you know, what Jerry does, what we do, really, what any of the data providers do to be here, I think is an important part of it. And like you said, there's definitely the added benefit when, you know, you get the right guy or gal that uses your stuff, you know, could. It definitely helps. I mean, Stanley Bavlish, Ron Rippey or two that were Brisnet users that we definitely were able to pump up a little bit. And then, of course, Michael Baychalk, who qualified on TwinSpires. You know, that was great for TwinSpires, no doubt about it. So it's a nice little ecosystem and good yin and yang.
And it's funny because you mentioned the ones that were Brisnet / TwinSpires associated. And there's been kind of a Chinese menu of winners, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's one of the things that's remarkable. And in fact, as we go through the weekend, and when Pete Fornatale joins me, and we have, you know, some players join us, you know, one of the things I do want to ask each of them is, you know, what they're using it as part of their handicapping. And, you know, I walk by laptop screens all over the place, and everybody's got their own thing. I mean, you got the software users, any of the different software configurations.
Right.
I see the optics program on some screens. You name it. I mean, virtually every possible combination of tools.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me, too, is not only the combination and the variety of tools, but then it's the order people use it in. So when it comes to that final decision and playing the odds board, what you have to do at a contest like this, what are the people relying on at that moment versus when they started handicapping 2 days ago? And a lot of times maybe it's just the PPs and get a feel for the race. And then when it comes time for that final decision, maybe it is a thorough graph where you're looking for that, you know, one number that'll put you, that'll give you the confidence to take the plunge on a cap horse, for instance, or optics, or maybe it's a trainer stat, you know, out of the PPs that you're sticking with at a price. So yeah, it's, like you said, Chinese menu, but throughout the whole 48-hour handicapping process as well.
And you know, Chris Littlemore. I mean, that was for me. It's always funny because when it comes time to talk to the winner, I mean, obviously, I knew what Paul Matisse. I mean, Paul Matisse's stuff is his own. I mean, right. he does his own figures. But Chris Littlemore said, "Well, I use, you know, I use the PPs. I use Daily Racing for."
I think the guy the year before too was pencil and paper basically. Yeah. I forget his name, but yeah, all different ways. And I think that to me, and I love, you know, I love the data. I mean, optics, throw graph rags, and all that stuff. I love looking at it, and I think any of it in combination can, you know, give you a clearer sense, help focus the race, but. You know, at the same time, Steve, at you know, the end of the race, you're playing the odds board, and you need to make the right value bets if you're going to win long term. And sometimes, you know, one data point is enough at the right price.
Exactly. And yeah, then there's also, you know, some decisions we've talked about strategically, the players that are playing two cards. And you know, yesterday, John Nichols, who ended up fifth in the last chance. The race at Gulfstream, the nightcap at Gulfstream, John was live to four horses in the Rainbow Six, and he took the two longest prices that he liked, the winner at 24-1 and the runner-up at 11-1. Those were the two he used. He put the longer price on his ticket that was further back, and he used the 11-1, the slightly more, you know, logical or you know, slightly more, not
somewhat
that much,
likely, yeah,
exactly, on his main ticket. And so the main ticket, actually, he gets place money from the 11-1, but as was, he still finished fifth. But if he makes that decision to put the 24-1 on the, or whatever it was, 21-1. If he puts that on his livest ticket, he wins. He absolutely wins. So, you know, there's those kinds of decisions too. Even when you're mostly right, you still don't necessarily convert it into a maximization of your opportunity.
Yeah,
and that's what we're pushing all the time, is maximizing your opportunity to be successful.
And we see that in the live money contest as well, you know. But more often than not, when we're talking to the winner afterward, they took the plunge. You know, they were willing to leave with nothing for the chance to win. And obviously that's not in play here, because all the contest wagers are the same. But you still need to, you know, look at what it's going to take to finish higher up, because you know the pay scale, you know, you want to be shooting for those higher spots, and sometimes that means, you know, going with the potential cap horse, even when it's slightly less likely of winning than even a, say, 10-1.
Well, let's turn our attention, and we'll check in with you later in the contest as well, Ed. Let's get some opinions in, and let's get some recapping in from last week, and of course, you know, the sequence of three Derby Trail events. Some thoughts about what you came away with from the Withers and the Holy Bull and the Lewis.
Yeah, definitely disappointed in Maximus Mischief. I thought he might be the one to reverse my Remsen thoughts on the Derby Trail, and just kind of one pace the whole way. I mean, I guess if you're going to take one positive from him, if you're looking to you know, bet on the rebound, which he'll be a much better price in this pool for Derby Future 2 than he was last time, I would think. He didn't completely quit like the other horse that ran with him, so somewhat positive. Maybe he can move forward off this, going longer again, and use his speed more as a weapon going long, but definitely disappointed at the price. I thought he was the most likely winner of the weekend. And the race then didn't come back too fast either. So I definitely saw that as a disappointment. And then the Withers and Lewis were fine. But I agreed with James when we talked about it for our On Points video. It just neither of those performances either made me think, wow, if these go on from here, we're, you know, looking at, you know, potential real Derby threats. So I'm looking elsewhere in the future wager this week from anyone who ran last week. Vekoma's a horse I'll watch where the price is. And then that Owendale race with Frolic Moore, Churchill Down COO as a piece of that horse, but I thought that race came back pretty tough, and if Owendale's one of the longer shots in this pool, I'd give him a look.
I was impressed with Owendale at the time, too, and it came in proximity to a conversation with Brad Cox, and so there was... this was a fun... Were you involved? You were involved in this committee? Are you in
no,
the committee?
Not,
no, you're not, right?
Mm-mm.
Well, this they put some fun names into this group.
Yeah, it seemed like I noticed they were willing to, you know, look a little further than just, you know, who was on the points list. And yeah, there's some looks. I mean, win. I haven't looked at I haven't seen if Thoroughgraph's put out their numbers yet, but on Ragazin, that last race was a blitz, so number-wise, he fits and might be okay. I'm really interested to see, you know, how they bet Game Winner and Improbable. I mean, to me, it's those two and everyone else from a, you know, if you were to rank the horses, it's hard to say they're not at the top. So I'll be interested to see how they get bet. And, of course, the field's always interesting to see when the money comes in and how much. So it's compelling. I think if you're outside the top half of the field and you like a horse, as I do with Vekoma and win, you might get your price.
Well, and I'm just looking through the ones that I mentioned earlier that there weren't many horses that were going to run this weekend, and of course yesterday Walking Thunder got beat in the 2,000 yeah. guineas at May Dan. He ran. You're going to see K-Nix Go, of course, tomorrow at Tampa. He went for 44-1 in the first pool, and he's 30-1. But of course, this is strictly one of those referendum horses that'll be based on
Absolutely.
What happens tomorrow. Global Campaign is running in the allowance race on Saturday. Coliseum is running, if they ever card the San Vicente, he's running in there. And I'm just looking, was there anybody else that is involved this weekend? That is it, just those four. The
field.
You know. The field, that's true. The field is running. It's very true, including Desmond. The one horse that they may, of course, he would have been a referendum horse because he's going to run on Sunday.
Right.
But Baffert, I thought Baffert tipped his hand a little bit with me on Monday about Desmond. So, you know,
the one who's not on there that I would have been really interested to play, and in fact, before it closed, I would add a ticket because I had someone get it on me when Johnny opened his book in Biloxi. But I like Galilean for Hollendorfer.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, it's a horse who could have been 40 or 50 to 1, maybe even higher. That would have, you know, taken a shot. His speed ratings fit, and you know, we'll see what Jerry decides to do with him going forward. But yeah, it's a group that, you know, there's two that I think have risen to the top for now, but I still think some opportunity to see some names, and looking forward to, you know, it moving along.
Well, and what you want to do too is look ahead to like next week, and the Risen Star Lemanite,
right.
You know, is that kind of a horse that you want to be ahead of the curve. Let's get some opinions about the weekend, and I've been telling everybody to be aware that tonight at Turfway,
yeah.
And I'm assuming you looked at the Battaglia.
I didn't.
You got to be kidding.
No.
This is right up your alley.
I know.
I'm shocked. Shocked. a big bulky field with
I was worried about the weather.
What's the difference?
If they don't run.
Well, they didn't run last night, right?
Right.
Because of the rain. But That was last night.
And it's supposed to get colder, so then
it might freeze. If there's a lot of water in
the
track.
I looked at one race, don't get me wrong. But with everything else, that was like,
Right. Yeah, no, there is a lot. All right, so then press on. Although I do want to tell people about a couple of other races, and I don't know if you've probably not included, but the King Cotton, the sprint leading toward the Count Fleet is very good and has got a nice group that came together in there. Wilbo for Chris Hartman, the good old Hartwood for James Chapman, and so on and so forth. So don't forget about that. 10-horse field that goes at Oaklawn is the feature in the 7th, and also, Delta Downs. If you haven't looked at Premier Night, they got a tremendous card.
Yeah,
bulky fields, very good.
Yeah, I would think probably 9-10 horse fields every race.
Absolutely, yeah. And that starts at 5:25 Central down there in Vinton on the Sabine Sand.
I've been.
It's a great little place.
Yeah,
it's a cute little place.
Yeah, I made the drive from Sam Houston one year, and glad I did.
Then what did you look at?
All right, well, I don't know if you've seen this week. I've been on the Cap Horse Jag.
Yeah, which is cool.
So the three races I have today are all horses I think could be Cap Horses. So those out there and listening that like to bet some prices, that's what I got. But did you see? This blew me away, and not like he's been training, you know, forever, but Chad Brown's never had a 25-1 winner or higher.
Ever?
Ever. His biggest price was Fantastic.
That seems...
I mean, it
seems impossible.
Me. Yeah, no.
You went back all the way to the beginning?
Yeah. Of his career.
Well, because there was a period where he wasn't a household name.
Right.
And
yeah.
How about that?
Fantastic in the United Nations was his highest price winner ever.
At what? At
23 or 4-1.
So, well, so I mean, it's been close. He was in the neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, and the reason I looked is because I looked up Bob Baffert after yesterday. He had that 25-1. You know, Baffert at 25-1. So I was just curious, and it had been 10 or 11 years since Baffert had one. So I was like, I wonder, like someone like Chad Brown. And yeah, sure enough,
how about
never.
That? Good job.
So yeah. All right. Well, the first mandatory today, Steve's Tampa Bay Race 4, and I like Iron Shadow. For Kelsey Danner, drawn well inside, going a mile on the turf at Tampa. Long layoff, 23 months, came back in a maiden claimer and won on the turf, stretching out two turns off that type of layoff, not necessarily easy, and got the job done. And, you know, some of these maiden claimers, especially off a layoff, I don't mind them right back against winners. I mean, it's not like stepping up against N1X or something like that. Speed rating a little on the light side, but if this one improves second time out with the ideal draw going a mile at Tampa, I think has a big shot at a big price. So that's number 3, Iron Shadow, Tampa Bay Race 4. It's the first mandatory today. So.
That comes, and we'll be on the air about 15 minutes ahead of it, so we'll remind everybody that Ed has got an interest there as a Cap prospect.
Yeah.
And Artie Schiller-Gelding that Larry Ravelli trained, and really had been a project that looked like and Kelsey Danner obviously did a nice job getting this gelding straightened out. And that maiden win, maiden 16 company, came at 27-1. So coming right back against winners.
Yeah, so we'll take a shot at a price. Then the mandatory, second mandatory today is Oaklawn. Not sure if 62.5s are bottom level, or excuse me, 6.25s are bottom level, or if they run 5, but, you know, pretty low. And one thing I noticed about Oaklawn, looking at the ultimate summary, inside post going 6 furlongs, doing very well, 19% post 1 through 3, and then post 4 and beyond, just 5-6% winners going 6 furlongs. So something about the inside this meet, doing well, and that's what landed me on Duke of Kent, number four, who's actually from post position three. But there is plenty of speed both to his inside and outside, and I thought it was interesting that Ricardo Santana takes the call for Martin Lozano, who's looking for his first win at the meet. But this one, if the speed develops right to his inside and outside and he gets a ground-saving trip, maybe Ricardo gets a seam and can get up at a big price.
Nice.
So that's what I'm looking there. And then turning the page to the Sam F. Davis, I'm going with our man Luch, going for gold. shipping in from Laurel, scratched out of the Holy Bull with the outside post last week. I wonder, and I haven't talked to Ron, but I wonder after he saw the results if he was kind of wondering if maybe they could add a shot on the front end, but or tracking Maximus Mischief and the other one. But I think this horse absolutely fits, even as a maiden, on our predictiform numbers that were developed with Kerry Fatias. The last race augurs well based on how we ran for an improvement, especially stretching out. So 20-1 or maybe 30-1 on the morning line. And knowing Nick Sko and a couple others are certainly going to take money, you know, Luch takes his lumps, but maybe he gets the spoils this time.
Well, and certainly it's funny we brought it up with Nick Tamaro. I know that from a, you know, from a standpoint of last year's efforts from the other in this field, those two races at Laurel are not that they score up okay.
Yeah.
With the rest of this field.
Yeah, and then he you know, drawn much better for this one than the Holy Bull, and you know, I don't think the mile and the 16th is going to be an issue. So yeah, I'm a believer at that price for sure, and we'll play him to be in the number. And I don't really have a, you know, sometimes you look at a 20-1 and you say, okay, this is the value, but I understand the, you know, the favorite, why they're the favorite. I mean, Nick Sko is no cinch, certainly, and, you know, well-defined is okay, certainly, and a few others in there. But this might be a case where I'm not even looking to hook him up in the exotics. He's just going to have to be the horse for me.
Look at you. All right. And by the way, our friend Ann Faulkner, and I appreciate Ann with the update, they are going to cancel tonight at Turfway.
There you go.
So the
hopefully that's not my only good pick of the weekend.
Well, the Battaglia, they'll bring it back next week, I imagine, and give everybody a chance to look at that
yeah,
race.
I'll be ready now. Now I'm on notice.
Yeah. I love it. Anything else?
No, that's it. Until you know, I'm defending my charity championship.
Oh, that's
so
right.
Hopefully, I'll have some additional looks. Certainly on the mandatory races, we'll tweet them out and whatever. But looking to jumpstart the weekend for sure in these first two mandatory races with some big prices.
Ed DeRosa, everybody, let's take a break right here. EJXD and we'll be
two. Part,
then two exactly. EJXD two. All the TwinSpires players wish them the best of luck, and BrizNet users. Back after this, we're going to hear from Mike Mulvihill from Fox Sports, and we're going to tie in with Fox Sports' newest star, Jonathan Kinchin. JK made the debut last week, and I guess, you know what? I guess we can. We might as well stay right here, Jonathan, since you sat right down. And welcome, and good luck this weekend again, and terrific start to the Saturday at the Races series on Fox. You looked like you were having a ball, and you delivered a 20-1 shot for everybody. You know, that's the way to start out the coverage.
No, it was a ton of fun. It was different than a lot of the other media things I've done. You know, the podcast stuff and being on your show. It's you can talk as long as you want. You can kind of have an idea when you need to slow down and pass it off to somebody else. But man, it was pretty fast and furious. There's someone in your ear kind of yelling while you're talking and just trying to work through it. But it was a ton of fun. I really enjoyed it a lot. Looking forward to the rest of the year.
Well, and when Michael joins us, we'll talk about Fox's commitment to the game. I mean, they've really been a wonderful partner for Naira and for the Jockey Club when the Jockey Club Tour on Fox debuted a few years ago and had those two good seasons. And it you know, to have this kind of exposure is invaluable. I mean, obviously NBC has the marquee coverage, and that'll lead into their Triple Crown coverage. But to get started this early and let players and fans get familiar with the horses that are feeding in, and you're covering a lot more than just the Derby Trail and the Oaks races. There's every category, every division is going to get some time in the sun here. The sprinters, the routers, the handicap horses, the turf horses. I mean, it's a great chance early in the season for people to kind of latch on to the themes of the year in racing.
I thought the show did a really good job, like you mentioned, having Oaklawn in the mix, and having, you know, it was Gulfstream, Oaklawn, Santa, Aqueduct. It expressed to players that could be interesting in our game from a gambling perspective of all the action, how fast it is and how often you can get down, and you know, with this age of sports betting and getting the attention that it's gotten, you know, those are, you know, I think maybe even Andy Serling said it's like a 3-hour inquiry, right, a sports bet. And I think that the Fox broadcast gives a great account of our sport and how much action there is. And every 5 minutes, if you want to have a bet, you can have one. And I think that the show did a great job with that, and I was really pleased with that.
You've sat in on plenty of sets of the players' shows during Breeders' Cup and so forth. What did you notice different, or what do you think you're going to have to adjust to?
I think the biggest thing for me was that, like, all of those times, I'm a guy at the racetrack who happens to be asked to do the simulcast show. Like, I'm on the Fox show, so that's different for me. Like, I feel like I'm a part of the team, and that, like, you know, they're for the long haul, so there's a little bit more ownership rather than just kind of showing up and hanging out. And so, you know, and I think the biggest difference to me is just how it's a serious production. There's a lot going on, and it's well planned out, and you got commercial breaks, and you're live, you know, there's if you make a mistake, it's a big deal. So that was the biggest difference for me, probably, is just the pace of it.
Well, the person responsible for everything that has gone on at Fox, Michael Mulvihill, joins us, and look forward to getting Mike on to discuss the commitment that Fox has made to racing. And over the last several years, it's really taken a major role. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. I took the opportunity. Jonathan was going to be with us, so I figured, you know what, let me slip Jonathan in while you were on. So that was the voice of Jonathan Kinchin, who you're in the process of making into a network star.
Well, I hope so. That's our goal. I mean, he's certainly off to a great start. I don't know if you were able to see the show this Saturday, but Jonathan actually brought home a 20-1 shot in the finale at Oaklawn. I don't think you see a lot of 20-1 shots getting tabbed out there, but he's a guy who can actually do it. He's obviously really sharp, young, energetic, and I just think he's the kind of guy that we need on camera more often in horse racing, so we're happy to have him.
Well, in addition, of course, the news came in the last 36 hours or so that Gary Stevens, now with his career in the irons, a second run at his career is over, and he's feeling good after a little neck and back surgery. Gary officially joins the Fox Sports team, and I thought that was an amazing note in the release yesterday, Mike, about him being the 25th Hall of Famer that is part of a Fox broadcast group.
Yeah, thanks for noticing that. We're really proud of the fact that so many of our analysts are as accomplished as they are in their sports, with 25 Hall of Famers, from Terry Bradshaw and Howie Long to John Smoltz and now Gary Stevens. I mean, we could probably do a half hour just talking about Gary and his accomplishments on the track, and 3 Derbies, 9 Triple Crown wins, I think 11 Breeders' Cups. And then beyond that, I mean, he's one of the handful of people in racing whose name and image sort of transcends the racetrack. He's been in a very successful movie. He's done great TV appearances. He's one of those guys that when you talk to somebody who isn't following racing every day, they're just a general sports fan, he's a name that they know. And he just brings incredible credibility and accomplishment to our shows, and I'm so excited to have him as part of the team. I think we've really put together a terrific team of handicappers, people that you would want to spend a day at the racetrack with, and now the addition of Gary just puts us over the top. I think it takes us to a different level.
a big part of that, you know, that magic and that formula, of course, is Naira and the Naira production. Tony Olivato and his gravitas and long association with broadcasting of the sport, and you're using, of course, the, you know, the all the talent that interacts, whether it's on the racetrack, and then of course Lafitte Pincai the Third and Greg Wolf anchoring, and now with Gary and Jonathan and more. And one thing, Mike, that really I think makes these productions different. There's not a lot of the fluff, and there's none of the big hats and the, you know, the $10,000 juleps to deal with. It's for people who are really interested in the sport, learning how to play it, how to bet it, how to enjoy it from, you know, from every angle. And you know, Fox's involvement has really come at a key juncture for racing.
Yeah, and look, just to be clear, I don't think there's anything wrong with pretty hats and $1,000 juleps and, you know, get dressed up for a social event. I mean, that's great. That's part of what makes the game so much fun. And I think that on the big Triple Crown days and Breeders' Cup Day, there's an Ascot, for example, there's so much room to present that side of it. We're just trying, we have different objectives, right? Like, what we're trying to do is pretty different from what somebody else is trying to do on a Kentucky Derby day, where you're speaking to an audience of maybe 10 million, and a lot of them are people that only watch races once or twice a year. We're really there for the people who are paying attention day in, day out, playing every weekend, maybe playing every day, the guy who's really studying the past performances and putting some money through the windows and, you know, hopefully coming away with a little more than they started with. So they're just very different productions with very different aims, and I do like to think that we, and it's mostly been at Tony's direction, we have been able to create a product that is more for the regular horse player, takes the handicapping part a little more seriously, and hopefully we provide something that's, you know, just for a little bit different audience than what you might find on the first Saturday of May.
Mike Mulvihill with us, the executive vice president from Fox Sports, and the Saturday at the races telecasts, and before that, of course, the Jockey Club Tour on Fox. Mike, talk about what racing represents from a network standpoint, and the network's commitment to it, the interest in it, and obviously it's at this point it's a long term commitment as well.
Yeah, I think there are two ways that we can come at that question, right? One is that Fox Sports fundamentally, and this is just stating the obvious, you know, fundamentally we are in the business of premium live events. We really feel like TV is evolving in such a way that the content that demands to be watched live and in real time is really taking on an enhanced value, because so much programming is becoming on-demand capable. You can watch it on Netflix, you can watch it on your DVR whenever you want, and there's less and less programming out there that you really have to watch as it happens. It's really only sports and news that sort of demands to be viewed in real time. So we feel like, in a broad way, there's a great opportunity for us as more TV viewing happens on demand and at the convenience of the viewer. We want to stockpile as much programming as we can that people have to watch in real time. That's the NFL, Major League Baseball, our college relationships, NASCAR, and now horse racing. You know, we've had this relationship first with the Jockey Club and now with Naira, and we've taken the opportunity to expand it quite a bit. We're going from 100 hours of programming last year now to 500. Next year, I think it'll be more like 600, in part because we want to really embrace any opportunity that we have to put more live content on our air that has to be seen as it happens. So that's certainly a big part of it. You know, another big part of it is that, I guess, topic A for the last year has been the overturning of PASPA and the fact that the states now have a path to legalize gambling if they choose to pursue it. And as we have this culture where gambling will become, I think, more and more of a mainstream activity, I think that actually presents a great opportunity for horse racing. I don't think that it's something that people in racing should fear. I think as gambling on sports sports events becomes more commonplace and legal in more states, horse racing will actually benefit from that rising tide. So we're thinking about ways that, as a media company, we can engage that opportunity. We've launched a daily show on FS1 about sports gambling. It's called Lock It In. We've expanded our deal with NYRA to a great extent. And we're going to keep looking at ways that we can be part of that mainstreaming of the gambling opportunity. I think that not just for us, but for companies like, you know, Comcast, Disney, CBS, all of us that are engaged in live sports, there's a real opportunity there, and we're all trying to figure out how to best approach it.
Not to reduce it to a monetization question, but the viewership and continuity, Mike, have you seen steady numbers, and how do you evaluate how it's being received, and if the audience is growing, if it's staying with I suppose it's can be very niche oriented with certain markets very much keyed in, Louisville, Lexington, Little Rock, etc., the Capital District, New York. I'm sure there's the pockets we're all familiar with as racing communities. But how does the network view how much this is worth in terms of eyes on the screen?
Yeah, that's a great question. Look, obviously ratings are the currency of our business. It's the language that we speak every day, and we do pay attention to the viewership metrics. On Saturday, the first Fox Sports Saturday at the Races of this year was the second most watched show of the day on FS2. That's a positive thing. But I would really tell you that while ratings are sort of my world, it's what I tend to focus on, in the case of this relationship, we really want to focus more on handle. Just the way that our relationship with NYRA is structured, it's great if the viewership numbers are there, but what we're really looking at is, are we driving handle? Are we helping them get more money either through the windows or wagered via NYRA bets? Our experience at Saratoga the last 2 years has been really positive in terms of handle. And I would probably just leave it at that. It's not really, it's not my data to share. But certainly we've seen really, really encouraging results, so much so that it was a key factor in deciding to expand the relationship the way that we have. And that's unique, right? It's the only, probably the only sport on television where you wouldn't necessarily say that ratings are the most important metric, that we're really looking at a different business metric at a gauge of whether the TV content's working.
This is open-ended, of course, but given, as you mentioned, the sports betting landscape and what is transpiring in the data market there, and I suppose in the alliances that are being built, is some kind of interactive profit-sharing metric is something that Fox would discuss or be interested in or has pursued at all?
It's a little early for me to answer that question. I think what we're focused on right now is just creating the best TV show that we can create every week through the spring and then every day later in the summer. I don't mean to be evasive, but we're really focused right now on just making the best TV show that we can to try to drive handle for NYRA. And then in the future, to give you a very broad answer, as I say, like everything that's related to new revenue opportunities in the gaming space, horse racing and otherwise, those are all opportunities that we're taking really seriously. We wouldn't be doing our jobs if we weren't. So I realize that's not very specific, but I think we really just want to focus on making a great TV show. And as other opportunities come up, we'll examine them as they come to us.
Well, you're certainly putting on the tremendous show, and the commitment from Fox Sports with the personnel and with the time commitment throughout the year and at key junctures, you really the network really stepped up in a big way, Mike. That racing needed, because going back to the jockey clubs initiative with the McKinsey study that demanded that the sport get as much airtime as possible to introduce it and to provide continuity and to, you know, bring people their interest levels up and then, you know, to make them into betters. I mean, that was instrumental. And there's a certain other network that really failed to live up to its commitment, but Fox has really filled that void.
Yeah, thanks. We're excited about the partnership that we have. I'm personally really bullish on the future of horse racing. I think, not to get on a tangent, but I think sometimes there's a little bit of defensiveness about the state of the sport and the future of the sport, and we really see it in a positive way. Like, handle's gone up 4 straight years. We've obviously expanded our commitment in terms of hours of programming. The big events, the Triple Crown events, set handle and attendance records seemingly every year. We think a lot of the indicators are trending the right way, and we want to contribute to there being a little bit more positivity and enthusiasm around the game because we think it's got a really high ceiling.
Well, and that's a wonderful endorsement. Mike Mulvihill, appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you on the road here along the way. And Jonathan,
Yeah, no, Mike made fun of my jacket. He told Tony that I looked like I was in the circus. So hopefully he's not mad at my jacket from the show last week.
Mike, you should participate in wardrobe decisions.
neither does Jonathan, for the most part. Everybody that knows him was shocked that he even had a jacket on compared to the usual attire.
Hey, keep looking those 20-to-1 shots. You can wear anything you want.
Exactly.
The boss gave me clearance. The boss gave me clearance.
I love it. Mike, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Steve. We'll see you in Saratoga, if not before.
Absolutely. Mike Mulvihill, everybody, EVP at Fox Sports, and has been instrumental in the network committing to racing and giving us the kind of programming that really it's year round. The Belmont and Saratoga live shows, and this all kind of came together beautifully with Naira's advancement and the production. I mean, they're doing, Tony Olivato and his team, Eric Donovan and everybody, they're producing on a daily basis. It'll be 5 days a week now at Saratoga, of course, and just a full-fledged Saturday show Wednesday through Sunday. I mean, it's an unbelievable, really an unbelievable accomplishment, and it has not, the industry has not recognized it like they should.
One of the things I think that's great about it is you know, when you go to TVG or something like that, you walk into a Buffalo Wild Wings, there might or might not be a TVG on. There's always a Fox Sports on. So whether you're watching a soccer match earlier in the day or you're watching something else, the idea that if you weren't coming to watch the show, but the channel in a restaurant or bar is going to change automatically. I mean, the channel's going to stay the same and racing's going to come on next, and you're going to get a lot more eyes that weren't even looking for it, I think is exciting. You know, I think we all believe that the sport is the most beautiful sport in the world. It's the best gambling game. It's the best puzzle when it comes to, and it's the best place to bring friends and family to is the racetrack. They can get dressed up, have a couple of drinks. You know, it just has a feel to it that if you can introduce it to people in a way that they can process it, it'll continue to grow and continue to create new fans. And and getting it on Fox and getting it on, you know, national kind of mainstream media, you know, channel it, that's something that we're all looking forward to and very excited about.
Well, with the addition of Stevens and with LP3, and I mean, basically, it's a network. You know, it's the highest profile.
You mentioned
gathering.
You mentioned the press release. This is the first time, and I predict the last time that I'll ever be in a press release with a Hall of Famer. My name was like in the same release as him, and I was like,
what if you become an NHC Hall of Famer?
Well, that's true. That's true.
Then every time you're in a press release, there'll be a Hall of Famer.
What do you think? I got probably another 20 years before they'll put me in here?
Well, considering that Dave Goodfriend it should be in. And
you know what I told Dave? I Dave won't mind me sharing this. You know, it's a conversation that's had amongst the players' committee. Just, you know, hey, you know, let us know who you think. And then, you know, obviously the NTR makes the decision. I had thought about nominating Dave, but I'm dead serious, and I told him this. I didn't do it this year because he's already going to get his moment up there. I didn't want to package the moments together. Let's do it next year, and then we can have him on the stage again.
That's a good point.
That was an honest decision, and I let him know that. I think he's obviously worthy of it. But he'll get his. I think that he probably thinks it's more of a personal thing against him, but I don't think that's the case. I mean, he'll get there sooner than later.
Let's get a couple of questions in. I still got to get the hammer, and I'm waiting to see if Tom Quigley wants to come now or if he'll come in during the show. So, any opinions? Anything that I don't want you to give away contest selections necessarily, but any stakes opinions for the weekend?
I'm trying to think who's. You know, I think George Weaver's horse has a little bit of a shot in that race. The
Philly race.
Yeah,
the Suncoast.
He had mentioned we went and Jake Ballas has horses with him. We went and watched him train. He had mentioned you ever really thought. She was like great, and then she wowed him, and he thinks that she's got a lot of improvement her still. So I think she's a little bit interesting at a price. I'm excited about this maiden race today at Oaklawn with Von Trapp, Captain Von Trapp, or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the Monomoy girl is in there as well. I'm going to play the outside horse for Moquette. I think it'll be a little bit of value. I think the Monomoy will get bet. The Aspison horse, the Phoenix horse, will get bet as well. He's got a little bit of trouble getting out of the gate. And he's shown that in his last three starts. And he'll probably be the favorite. Monomoy Girls Full will be the Cowboy Diplomacy, I think is the name, will be second choice. And maybe a little bit of meat on the bone there with that with the Moquette horse on the outside with Ricardo Santana. So I'm looking forward to playing that as an optional if I can get a good price. And man, I'm going to do a lesson that I learned last year. It was my first time not being double qualified. I had one entry last year, and I made the cut. And I thought to myself, if I can make it with one, and I just play, and I play my two like they're one. If I make the cut, then I've got a really good shot of kind of, you know, making some money here. I can split up on Saturday morning or tomorrow late, or I can split up on Sunday morning. So my strategy is going to be pretty aggressive. I'm going to play my two entries kind of like they're one. Some of the mandatories, maybe two of them, I'm going to probably split up. But the rest of the mandatories and the optionals, I'm going to play the same horses on both of them and hope I'm in a good position. And if I am, then I can kind of get a little creative later. But I'm not in the mood to zig and zag. I think I'm gonna lean on my opinion.
Well, your opinion has certainly carried you far and in a short time. That's one of the most amazing things because, you know, from an observer and, you know, somebody that was kind of hanging and you know, learning the basics with Nick Tamaro. You only started, this is inspirational for anybody. I mean, when did you remind everybody when you started playing seriously?
Yeah, I mean, I was a $100 ATM guy until, like, probably 2010, and then I had the big score with Champagne Doro, that pick four, and you know, like 84,000, and then, you know, that 84,000 was a little savings and a lot of bumps and bruises along the way to kind of learn the hard lessons you have to learn in this game to be a profitable player, and then obviously my involvement with the Matisse brothers was also another huge step for me in terms of understanding the game at a much higher level and understanding what it takes to be able to do this for a profit. So you know, it hasn't been very long, and you know, one of the things that I obviously enjoy the media opportunities, and they're fun to do. But it was never really a goal. It just kind of happened, you know. I just kind of ended up being a co-host on the podcast, and the Fox thing really kind of came to me, you know. Tony, I did a seminar with Pete at Saratoga, and Tony reached out and wanted to talk, and we met, and then he asked me to do a couple shows at Saratoga this summer, kind of as a trial run, I think, and then it kind of turned into what it is. So, it has been quick, really quick, you know. Like you said, 2015, it was my first NHC. That's not too long ago.
No, and it really should be inspirational to anybody that you know, that wonders how can I get to the next level? How can I? I mean, it's a wonderful shining example of you know what can happen and how you can basically learn the game and become a serious player in short order and. The opportunities. I mean, really, the game is welcoming on a lot of fronts, and you're a perfect example of it, and well done. So good luck in the weekend. We'll probably catch you later, of course, during the tourney shows. We'll take our last break of the morning. Hammer is going to close us out, and we'll talk to Rick. Tom Quigley will join us during the tourney show, which starts at 2 o'clock Eastern. Jonathan, thank you.
Thank you.
Jonathan Kinchin, UT Big Hair. There he is. Then the hair is a little bigger than usual. He's got the new do. Back after this with Hammer.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, weekend preview, and NHC, NHC coverage, 2 to at least 7:30 today, tomorrow, and Sunday. And again, stevebick.com, the Listen Live link, and if you want to write it down, stevebick.com, then add the slash listen-live-SiriusXM/. But if you go to the website, it's right there, right on the left column among the menu. Listen Live, and we should have a lot of fun. It's been one of the really out of nowhere elements of At the Races, coming out here 5 years ago and becoming one of the real enjoyable highlights of the broadcast year. One of the highlights we had hoped was going to be Hammer getting to his first NHC. But a conspiracy is keeping Hammer from coming. Good morning.
I see. It seems like it. Yeah, well, car problem. And, you know, anyway, just the way the timing was. And I was here. My wife was there. I couldn't get another car. Anyway, we're stuck here. But and because it's really tough to miss, not only just being in Las Vegas with a lot of people you know, friends, it's doubly dangerous, but it's a lot of fun. You know, obviously to see you and be part of the gang there, had, you know, a bunch of people that I wanted to see and be around and learn from. And, you know, Leo, and you have Jonathan on there, and Duke, and James, and Nate, and, you know, David, and Eric. Bunch of guys out there I was planning on seeing, but listening to you is the next best thing. And I got to say, I listened to you a few minutes ago talking to the gentleman from Fox Sports, how refreshing it was to hear him mention that the pageantry and all that is second, and gambling and giving out good information and handle was number one. That is a breath of fresh air to hear about a racing show. And, you know, the fact that they have Jonathan on there and gives it a lot more credibility to the bettors. He's going to teach them a lot. And then with Gary announcing that, too, I think that's a big move in the right direction.
Agreed. And it's also encouraging as can be to hear you know, a network executive talk about how bullish they are as an entity on the game.
Well, exactly. It's fantastic. And, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, I've been out here in the entertainment, quote, entertainment, TV capital of the world for a while. Why nothing ever happened out here in Los Angeles as far as a show like that? I mean, I know why, and you know why, but, you know, it's amazing. But however it happened, and I'm glad Jonathan brought that point up at the end. It's going to be on. You're going to go into the sports bars, and the whatever channel is Fox Sports, it's going to be on there, and racing's just going to show up and be part of the program. So regular guys that, you know, are in the bar looking up, they're going to sit and watch, and eventually they're going to want to know how to make a bet, and they're going to make a bet. So I think it's great that it's continuing. But, you know, talking about the contest there, which is the main thing, the only thing that matters. And I always seem to miss, unless you gave it at the beginning, a quick run through the rules, though, because I like to follow along and kind of think in these guys' heads what they're going to do next. I know they have the mandatories each day, and then are they allowed to bet whatever they want the rest of the time? Can they only bet a certain amount? Just a quick synopsis of the rules would be great.
Well, the rules, the format is mythical $2 win place bets, and today into tomorrow they'll then take the top 10% of the field and cut down to, you know, call it about 68 or so, and then on Sunday there'll be a semifinal among that group, and the top 10 then go to the final table. So it's a fairly straightforward the mandatory races. You've got eight of the mandatories, and that everybody has to bet, and then everybody else has to add another seven electives, races that they, you know, they're choosing, and that's what that's what makes it fascinating, because everybody's approach to the mandatories is different. You know, some people will just, you know, pick the horse no matter what the price that they think is going to win, period, and that's all they care about, and they just add to their total. Others, especially if there's, you know, very short priced favorites, they will go looking for prices in mandatories. And so while we are accustomed to thinking that the elective races will, you know, be where the races, where the contest is won or lost, in a lot of ways the mandatories are the, you know, the spine, the backbone of what is going to transpire, and how everybody handles them ends up being, you know, really the determining factor once we get past you know, the cut down tomorrow afternoon.
So after today, 10% are left and move on to tomorrow, right?
No, everybody will get a chance into tomorrow, and then there's,
oh, okay.
You know, then there's the cut down, and then the final on Sunday. Sunday's got the, yep, both a semi and a final on Sunday.
That's wonderful. You know, it's great. Like I said, I miss the atmosphere there. But anyway, it's actually sunny here in Southern California. It's been and chilly. So for the ones that are catching up here on the races from Santa Anita. The weather's been a little bit iffy back and forth. It's supposed to now rain a little bit tonight, quarter inch-ish, maybe a little bit more stop. for Saturday and then maybe a little bit more on Sunday. Doesn't sound like anything close to the way it was last week. So the only thing that looks like that's going to affect, if anything, is the turf course. It'll stay on the side where there's not going to be a highway. It will have a little give to it, so you know, keep that in mind for all the, you know, the players that are looking at that, the weather. I don't think the course has had a chance to harden up. You know, we haven't had that many days of sunshine and warm weather, so just the course will probably be playing the same as it has recently. And I guess there's on Saturday especially, there's three stakes there at Santa Anita. Two of them on the turf, but one of them is in the contest. The San Marcos,
yeah,
which came together pretty good. I mean, the Thunder Road, which is a mile race, is on the same day. Only has six horses, which really shows how if you got a good turf horse, come to California. But then again, you know, we just had a $7 million race a few weeks ago, and that wasn't really loaded either. So at this time of year, there's not a whole lot of stars out there, which. You know, it's kind of wild with the proliferation of turf racing that's taken over in the last few years. So the Thunder Road only has six; it's not in the contest. But it's amazing how you start to think. And I've been in a couple of contests, not this big one, but along the way, and you have to transform your mind into, you know, taking the favorite and basically let's toss it and let's look for a price. And you wonder why you just don't do that on an everyday basis because you don't need the volume of winners that you do, and you can play a price, so you kind of have a different mindset. So going into a couple of leagues, they had a little different mindset. Delafina, I don't think we want to touch that. I mean, she's just been an absolute superstar. Stubbed her toe once in the Breeders' Cup, and, you know, bad post, whatever it is, she's been spectacular since. She's going to be 2-5. I don't know if we want to go there. In the Thunder Road, you got River Boyne, who was the number one three-year-old out here last year on the turf for Jeff Mullins, practically unbeatable. You know, they take a short little step up here, these three-year-olds, like he is racing against older for the first time. So is there a gap there that you can maybe take a shot to beat him? I mean, he's 8-5 in the morning line. I mean, that'd be a gift if you got 8-5. But we don't want to take 8-5. An interesting horse to look at is True Valor in here at a little bit of a price. For Simon Callahan, second time back off a little bit of a layoff and did not run bad last time in a little prep race, the big score. He's 8-1 in the program, not a bad price in a small field. So I think those are the kind of things we're looking for here in a Blackjack Cat who has a 1 in 2 years and a Desert Stone that is also a four-year-old, only won a couple races. I think True Valor offers a lot of true value in that short field there. Now in the San Marcos, it looks like there's a couple of dirt horses in here that from the Baffert stable. He's very astute at doing that. If there's some rain, he'll throw some horses in there. You got Roman Russo in there, who's never run on the turf, and Dabster, the same thing. Dabster scratched out of the mud or the slop the other day. So if there is enough rain to come off, those two will obviously be a factor. Otherwise, I wouldn't expect them to run in here. Once again, these races out here, Colts and Phillies, they rarely run them alike. And so you want to look for a bit of a price in here. Chicago Style seems like he fires every time, and he'll be the favorite. Steve View, interesting, has turf and dirt experience, actually runs some very good races on the turf. I think if you get near 5-1 for him, it'll be a gift. A couple in here at a price, which is what we're looking for. The couple, the two John Sadler horses, Stejo, which is a purchase with Hironas, his partner there. They do a great job of picking horses out, and they pop first time out sometimes there as gift box did opening day. So Stejo's in there. We'll take a look at him. First time Lasix, and the horse right above him, Platinum Warrior, who comes out of the San Gabriel and ran just behind Chicago Style there. Both of those horses are 12-1 in the program. So I'm looking to, you know, if you're looking for a little bit of a value, I would look at horses just like that. And
excellent.
Right? I mean, hanging in there. And then at Sunday's card, they didn't draw that yesterday.
So we'll wait
for whatever reason. So we don't know the mandatories there. If there's going to be some at Santa Anita. But once again, it could be a little rain involved.
Well, we'll see what how that turns out. And they were looking forward to the, you know, the San Vicente and the Baffert's, and if they can get another horse. Jay Pridman mentioned that it seemed like they were trying to get a fifth. Hammer, I appreciate it. I'm sorry you can't be here. We'll check in next week.
All right. Carry on, Steve. We'll be listening to you all weekend. Good luck.
I hope everybody enjoyed. I want to thank Marty McGee and Jay Pridman, Nick Tamaro, Jonathan Kinchin, Dick Powell, Hammer, Ed DeRosa, Mike Mulvihill. We'll get Tom Quigley on here later, 2 o'clock Eastern Time. SteveBeck.com, listen live link, 3 days of NHC, post time seconds away at Gulfstream, at least the, at least the stated post time. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you in 2 hours.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and catch the summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.